Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, is it the UK Tech Weekly Podcast you're looking for? Listener, I sincerely hope so, because this is the latest edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, delivered to your head each and every Friday like a 7-day birthday, keeping you abreast of the latest happenings in the hip-hop happening world of tech. This is your weekly spoonful of audio sugar from the supernatural nannies who bring you PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. Every 7 days, we rent out a church hall and form an audio support group, caring through sharing on the big issues of the week in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. You can hear us thanks to our sponsor, Audio Technica, and find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Now, don't forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. It's called social media for a reason. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the inspiring Christina Mercer, Online Editor of TechWorld.com.
Hello.
The bullets firing Lewis Painter, Staff Writer of PC Advisor.
Hello.
And the mostly tiring David Price, Acting Editor of Macworld UK.
Hello. How are you, Matt?
I'm very good, thank you. In this week's episode, we are all over Huawei's P9 launch. We're talking WhatsApp, encryption and the Panama Papers, and we will be saying hi and asking why in the Wi-Fi versus Li-Fi debate. Stay tuned for that one. It's a great show with a cracking cast, so let's do this. Huawei! Oh! Huawei! Oh! Lewis Painter,
wow!
You spent a lot of time in the middle of Battersea Park yesterday, and it wasn't because you were checking out the monkey in the zoo. What gives?
Well, Huawei has just launched their brand new flagship phone, the Huawei P9. And I do the hand gestures all the time, I don't know why. along with the P9 Plus, which is its bigger brother, like the 6S and the 6S Plus, and all those other phones. The thing that makes this different is the dual camera setup, though. So you've got two rear-facing cameras, which is, I mean, it's been done before, but not in the same way as this, because Huawei has worked with Leica to manufacture these.
So Leica make lenses for, like, proper cameras.
Yeah, proper cameras, really expensive cameras. Yeah. So, I mean, the idea is that basically you have one sensor is colour, one sensor is monochrome. And when you take a picture, it uses the colour picture, but then the monochrome picture takes in a lot more light and contrast, and it makes, you know, pictures look a lot brighter, look a lot more well lit. So it should mean the end of poorly lit you know, dark photos. But I mean, whether that actually happens or not is,
so you had a chance to play with the Huawei P9.
I did yesterday. Yeah, well, we actually got to take one home, which is the most exciting thing about it. So I've been snapping pictures on the tube and kind of everywhere that I've gone.
Sure.
But I mean, it's really nice. It's really thin. It's 6.95 millimeters thin, so it's 1.5 millimeters thinner than the iPhone 6S, and it has like an incredibly slim bezel around the edge of the screen, so it looks like it's edge to edge. It's not quite edge to edge. There's like a 1.75 millimeter bezel, but it's pretty much invisible. It looks really nice.
And the specs, these are flagship specs.
Yeah, flagship. You got the brand new Kirin 955 processor with 3 gigabytes of RAM, 32 gigs storage. Oh yeah, it's all very sexy stuff.
Yeah. And so, to the uninitiated listener who may not know, who are Huawei.
They're a Chinese brand. I mean, they're massive. I mean,
huge company.
Huge. Yeah, that's one way to describe them. I mean, I'm pretty sure they do a lot of the infrastructure for kind of internet in the UK and around Europe.
Sure.
But they kind of, you know,
they traditionally make networking products.
Yeah, there, but they are also, I believe, one of the top, certainly one of the top 10, if not top 5 smartphone manufacturers in the world.
Yeah,
they're number 3 at the moment.
That's Chris Martin, listener. He's our engineer and editor, and he's shouting in from the sidelines because he also knows about Huawei.
Chris knows a lot about Huawei. But yeah, no, it's just the issue is with Huawei is that they don't have a lot of, you know, you don't get a lot of excitement about Huawei products in Europe until now, because last night, you know, networks like EE3, Vodafone, O2 have all confirmed that they're all going to be stocking the Huawei P9 for contract users.
And this is big news, right? Because in the past we've had Huawei phones announced with great fanfare. We've reviewed them. They've been good phones. And then you just can't get them in the UK.
Nothing happens with them. It's like with the Huawei Mate S. I went to the launch in Berlin in September last year, and there's this massive fanfare. It was all very exciting stuff. And they said, yeah, it's going to be available in October. It's going to be great. October came and went. It wasn't available. You know, they kind of had limited stock here and there, but we didn't really see a lot from it in 2015 in general.
So it's kind of a classic case of a large company that we haven't, or we may not have heard of in the UK, doesn't have great brand values in the UK, principally because it's huge, but it's huge in China.
Yeah.
China has a lot of people, listeners, so it doesn't need necessarily to be all that big in a small country like the UK, but clearly we're an important market, and Huawei's essentially throwing money at getting this, what looks to be excellent product.
Yeah, I mean, Huawei have always been known for making, you know, the premium, nice smartphones with, you know, like £200 cheaper than their competitors, really. I mean, rumour suggests that the P9 is going to be about £450 in the UK, which, you know, puts it at, well, it's about...
It's about half what the big smartphones...
Yeah, if you compare it to, like, the Galaxy S7 Edge or, you know, the iPhone 6S, you're looking at least £200, £300, depending on the storage capacity you get.
Yeah.
Cheaper in pricing. You know, it's worth it, I think.
And it does look nice, doesn't it? Because I haven't actually seen the phone, but I've seen photos of it. It looks like a desirable object that I would be proud to have on me.
Yeah, I think Huawei does really well with their design. It's kind of very, you know, it's very slim, right? It's very sleek. It's very sexy looking. And they've got loads of different finishes and different colours for it. So you can kind of choose one that's exactly right for you, which is a nice option.
I mean, Lewis showed it to me this morning.
The phone?
The phone. And,
let's just clarify.
And I was wowed. I think it looks fantastic.
I was wowed.
And the design on the back, what did you call it? The touch ID?
Touch ID. It's just a fingerprint. Rear-facing fingerprint scanner. So when you're holding the phone, you've already got your finger on the back of the phone, so you can just tap it to unlock it.
And you can also swipe it, you said.
You can swipe down to access notification center, double tap it to kind of clear the notification center settings, swipe between pictures in your gallery. It's got kind of different functions to it. It's not just the one trick pony.
Lewis is doing some quite vigorous finger gestures.
I do sometimes worry that his personality doesn't come across well in audio because he's such a visual man.
I could say sitting on the opposite side of the table to him, Christina and I are quite relieved. This is not a 3D
eyes poked out and all sorts.
So I think another critical issue about this company, and the word is spelt Huawei, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is pronunciation. Now, you've done some lovely pronunciation there, Lewis. Christina, would you like to pronounce that word?
Huawei.
Lovely H. Yeah. David Price?
Huawei.
My understanding from our Chinese colleague who worked with us last year was that you don't pronounce the H.
Nope.
It's Huawei.
That's what I've been told as well,
We're all putting slightly racist faces.
What's a racist face?
Well, all I'm saying, listener, is that there are some racist faces. That's... I'll leave it at that.
I'm going to move this on fairly swiftly. So, knowing the market as you do, Lewis, do we think the Huawei P9 is likely to succeed?
I mean, judging by, you know, the amount of effort that Huawei's gone to showcase the phone, you know, there must have been at least 1,000, 2,000 people in that hall yesterday, and most of the press got their own Huawei P9 to take away to review. So, you know, they're really pushing it. In terms of coverage, you know, you've got the UK carriers involved. You know, the likes of Carphone Warehouse are probably going to stock it. So, you know, it's in terms of getting it out there for the consumers to see, it's there now. Whereas in the past, Huawei, it's kind of been this brand you might have heard of, but you're not quite sure about.
So if you rock up to a high street store at the end of your contract, which is basically where the churn is in the market, and, you know, the salesperson will presumably, if they're putting this much money into it, be incentivized to sell this product, and it's like, look, you can have the Samsung, which will be a mid-range product, but here's a better product, better camera, better specs ostensibly, and it'll cost you the same.
Essentially. And the fact, and I've just got an email this morning saying that one of the carriers, I know, great, isn't it, one of the carriers, I can't remember which one, is actually offering the Huawei P9 with a smartwatch and all those other little bits and bobs that are Huawei manufacturers.
So that's Huawei funding that, isn't it?
Yeah.
They've also got Scarlett Johansson and Henry Cavill.
To do their adverts, yeah.
Okay. So do you think that's such a good idea after the reaction to Batman versus Superman?
Is he a tarnished brand now?
I don't know. I mean, Henry Cavill's brother used to work for PC Advisor, so we're very
thumbs up all round.
We'll say nothing against him.
David, from an Apple perspective, you know, with your deliberately less detailed knowledge of the Android markets, you know, do you have any questions to ask Lewis about this?
This would be slightly disingenuous because Lewis has actually been giving me the sneak preview of this. But
keep it to the phone, don't
I heard that there were a couple of little slip-ups in the presentation that suggest, even though I said earlier that I think the fingerprint scanner on the back is very nice. It's a new idea. It's very original. But some other aspects of it may be reminiscent of Apple. And he sort of gave that away.
Yeah, it was really awkward. He was announcing the P9 Plus, the bigger variant of the P9. And that has Press Touch, which the Mate S came with as well. But instead of calling it Press Touch, which is the Huawei-branded version of Apple's 3D Touch or their Force Touch, whatever you want to call it, he announced it as Force Touch. And then he kind of essentially said, well, they're both the same thing anyway. So that was a little bit awkward.
Press Touch is a terrible name, though.
Press Touch is a hideous name.
That's like police cops, isn't it?
We need to grow up on these things, don't we? It's like when, you know, Samsung launch a phone and they won't mention Android or, you know, Apple and Microsoft and Google. They're all the same. They won't mention the other product.
No.
Although, to our point, to our conversation last week, Microsoft has started talking about Apple in presentations, and it's a real relief because it's like it's not as if people don't think those companies exist. So it was a slightly clunky presentation.
Yeah, the presentation kind of
went on for quite a long time.
It went on for so long. It's kind of, you know, their main presentation where they announced the phones was there, and it was all great, and you had the CEO of Huawei on stage, and he was showing you the phone and the cameras and everything, and it was all great. And then he kind of left. He was like, right, this is the phone. Here's the pricing. Bye. And then the screen kind of, the stage went dark, and then we thought that was it, we're gonna go hands on. But no, the woman who was kind of leading the whole presentation came back and announced that we were gonna listen to some photographers that had used the phone. That went on for about half an hour to 45 minutes.
Ruddy hell.
And then you had Henry Cavill come on stage, and then he was talking for about 10-15 minutes. And
did
I think
he mentioned that his brother used to work for PC?
He did not. I was waiting for the shout out, but it didn't come. And I think there were some auto cue issues as well. So he's kind of standing there. He was telling everyone how much he enjoyed the phone, and then he's just standing there in silence for a few seconds.
You can stand there
while he was waiting for the auto cue to scroll up.
Christina did a proper.
I swooned. Yeah, swooned.
Christina, would you Henry Cavill over Elon Musk?
Oh no, Elon Musk.
Elon Musk, all the way.
Yeah,
interesting.
I've never heard this angle of Elon Musk before. Is he a hunk?
Christina's a big fan of Elon Musk.
Yeah,
that's a whole other podcast.
I couldn't love him more.
Does anybody else think so? So the name of the product is the letter P and the numeral 9, which makes sense written down. But we've been saying P9 a lot in this conversation.
I was wondering who would bring this up. Of course, it's Matt.
Okay, good. We've covered the subject. Let's go around the room. Huawei P9 launch. Hua, whoa, whoa, whoa. Or Hua, wahey. Christina.
Wahey!
That was quite a lot.
Technically, the question was Hua, wahey, or Hua, whoa, but we'll go with that. Lewis.
Hua, wahey.
I'm also Hua, wahey. I have one question left, actually, which is what's the battery life like?
3,000 milliamp battery in the P9, which the company claims will last 1.2 days with hardcore usage, or 1.5 days with just normal usage. I mean,
well,
whether that's
hardcore usage anyway, disgraceful behaviour.
It's hardcore usage, but yeah, no, it's like kind of like
sounds pretty good.
It sounds good, whether it is or not.
Hua, wahey. Right, we're back in 2 minutes. David Price, beep beep beep. Beep, 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 beep. I am sending you a secret message. But why this week of all weeks? What's up with WhatsApp?
I'll tell you that in a minute. I want to know what that message was. Can you decode it?
You've got to de-encrypt it.
I'm worried now. This week is actually very significant in the world of encryption, because WhatsApp has rolled out encryption, end-to-end encryption, for all of its users. And that is a cool billion people. Which is, I think you don't need me to say, very significant.
It's a lot of people.
It is. WhatsApp is sort of known as being a pro-encryption company, a pro-privacy company.
Well, it came from, I believe, it came from Eastern Europe.
One of the founders is Ukrainian,
right?
Jan Koum. Probably not saying that right. But obviously he knows a thing or two about intrusive governmental surveillance growing up in Ukraine.
Sure.
Came over to America and worked for Yahoo and started the company from there. And they rolled out a form of end-to-end encryption back in 2014, which only applied to their Android users, and only for voice messages.
Right.
No, not voice messages, normal messages. It didn't apply to pictures and videos and things like that. But now they've gone the full 9 yards, and so now everybody that uses it, if they update to the latest version, will have full end-to-end encryption with forward secrecy, which is also significant.
So, I mean, I didn't actually update anything. I presume that means I was on the most recent version of WhatsApp.
Yes.
And I just started getting these messages that said, interestingly, a conversation by conversation, my messages to my wife went first and then the family message. I don't know if there's any significance in that. But telling me that that it was now end-to-end encryption. So yes. In the past, what's happened is what the central store of information has been encrypted.
Yeah, because I thought it was like...
They did partial encryption. It would have been encrypted to the servers.
Right.
But the point is that if somebody obtained a wiretap order and demanded that WhatsApp give up the information, then they could have done because they have access to it. But the system, the end-to-end system, is that when you send a message, your phone contacts the WhatsApp servers and requests an encryption key. And this will be a unique encryption key for each message because that's what's meant by forward secrecy. Then it will send the encryption key back to you. Your phone will use that encryption key to encrypt it, send it, now encrypted, now gobbledygook, to WhatsApp, then on to your
recipient. Okay, so WhatsApp
recipient.
Itself cannot decipher the message.
That's right.
Is the point.
Oh.
So in an Apple versus FBI style situation.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should mention Apple because it's odd that I haven't been talking about Apple so far. The obvious comparison point for this is iMessage. And iMessage also has end-to-end encryption. Which is very nearly as good, but not quite, because with WhatsApp's end-to-end encryption, you can verify your encryption key. This is just a small additional feature, but when you're looking at your message, you request the verification key. It shows you a QR code and an alphanumeric code, and you can show or send either of those to the person you're speaking to, and they can compare it to what they're using. They can just scan the QR code and it will say, yes, this is the right code, this is the code that's been used here. Under iMessage, what Apple could in theory do, this is sort of a backdoor that they could use if there was a wiretap and they agreed to it, is that they could send you a bogus encryption key. They could send you the correct encryption key and an extra encryption key that the FBI, for example, would be given access to.
Right.
And even though nobody is suggesting that Apple would do that,
there
is in principle a backdoor that you
could
stop.
In fact, recent evidence would suggest that they absolutely wouldn't.
Absolutely
do that.
Not.
But, okay, that's interesting. And then are there any other? I was trying to think. When I first started using WhatsApp, Viber was the big rival, and that seems to have disappeared somewhere.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah,
it's
Telegram, isn't there? Telegram is encrypted.
And how does this relate to things like BBM or... Messenger within Google Docs and things like that.
Because I don't think those are encrypted. There are other.
I suspect they're absolutely not encrypted. That's
yeah, there are other encrypted options, and a lot of people have said that this is a really bad thing because it will allow terrorists, for example, to communicate.
I hate those terrorists.
They're. I'm starting to think that they're not good people.
maybe we should just give them a different name.
Yeah, maybe. Or freedom fighters or something.
Well, no, just like funnists or something.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's nice. Well, I'm now actually going to have to talk about terrorism and you've ruined it. So let's get serious.
Okay.
In the Paris attacks, it has been claimed that the attackers used encrypted data to organise their attack. And they've not said specifically that this was WhatsApp, although it certainly could have been because this was after they implemented
this
it
is,
on Android.
This is politics creeping into tech as well, though, isn't it? Because
totally.
We had this with the London riots, that all of a sudden BBM was a target. Essentially, what happened there was that, as always happens, law enforcement and politics were behind tech and almost scapegoating the technology by which people spoke. I mean, historically, people have terrorists, funnists, have managed to get together and plot their evil plans you know, regardless of what technology.
Yeah, if you watch The Wire, it all looks really out of date now. But of course, yeah, they get the burner phones, and then they get the taps on those, and they use something else, and they'll find their way around it. I find that we are very inured now to the idea of surveillance in a technology context. So I think of it in non-tech sort of analogies, and I think, well, if we if somebody started using sophisticated code in their letters, you know, their paper letters that they sent to people, and then the government said, well, I don't think you should be allowed to write in code, because what if I need to look at it in case you're doing something illegal? Then we tell them to
ban terrorism.
I think that might be the way forward.
Okay. Something there.
So, in other encryption news, the big political story this week is the so-called Panama Papers. David, what's happened there?
Well, firstly, it's a tax story. So wake up, it's all right. It is an interesting tax story because it affects many of the most powerful, in fact, pretty much all the most powerful and rich people in the world.
I don't think you'll find my name in there, David Price.
Well, we haven't completely looked through it yet, so it might still be in there.
How did we find this information? How did this information come to light?
Well, that's the critical thing. So it's a Panamanian law firm called Mossack Fonseca, and they have been giving legal advice to wealthy people around the world for many years. They've had a data breach, and they've now said that it was a hack. That hasn't been confirmed. I mean, I suspect there may be an element of human involvement. Either somebody on the inside has thought that this is not really moral and they've chosen to get it out there, like Snowden did, or maybe it's just human error. Somebody's messed up. But the information has got out there and it's been leaked to many, many media outlets around the world. But to actually make the most of this data stockpile, they've had to use big data analytics software, because without it, it would be impossible to make
just so big, so much vast information.
Yeah, there's more than 11 million documents, more than 2 terabytes of data. Yeah. And this is actually, I find this really exciting, because this is a form of journalism that exists now and is fantastic for investigative work.
Well, it'd make a good slideshow as well.
It would make really good snackable content. But wouldn't have been possible several years ago. Because this brings investigative assignments within the reach. I mean, that in the past would have been monumental in scope and would have been almost impossible. And now it brings within the scope of small teams, which is really quite nicely timed as all the newspapers around the world are coming under the cosh and slashing their reporter departments. Mm. But this data has revealed that many, many influential and rich people have been employing offshore tax avoiding funds. No, there isn't an implication that this is illegal.
Immoral,
this is
just perhaps, if not illegal.
It is. Yeah.
And so, just to bring it back to the WhatsApp encryption story, would encryption have allowed our elite overlords to stuff us in secret this way? Or is, I suppose what we're saying here is that somewhere along the chain, human error has allowed for this information to come out.
But that's exactly it. Yeah.
If it was all shared on WhatsApp, that error wouldn't have been possible.
That'd be okay.
But then WhatsApp is owned by Facebook, right?
That does worry me a little. But they've made a big thing about how Facebook is sort of leaving them alone, that they're happy for this to happen. And I get the impression that Facebook would quite like having this almost like a vanity project, that they've got this smaller department, still very big, but smaller department that is doing this good stuff.
I think it's a bit more than that, though, because if you look at what's happening in the Far East, you mentioned QR codes earlier, and, you know, 5 years ago, QR codes were going to be huge in the West, and it just didn't happen. But if you look at the way people are transacting in, say, Japan right now, things that recognisably look like WhatsApp are the main medium of contact between a business and a customer, including transacting. So people are buying stuff over Messenger. And the very fact that it is encrypted and it's peer-to-peer, but it is also one-to-many, is making it, it's just kind of, in much more than the open internet, it's how people are making purchases and dealing with companies. And Facebook's pretty smart, recognises this, doesn't quite know how it's going to work out, but understands that it needs a better messenger tool than Facebook Messenger tool, or at least another messenger tool as well as Facebook Messenger tool, to be in that market if, as expected, it becomes the principal way that we all interact with businesses over the next few years.
I mean, Facebook has an interesting attitude to privacy.
It does.
You still feel like it would be happy to protect your privacy from law enforcement.
Yeah.
But it wants you to share it wants to be able to get you to buy stuff.
Yeah. It wants to be able to sell your data to anonymously to a company, which becomes a very interesting middle ground. It's kind of like Google's business now, which we all benefit from, which is we know lots and lots of bits of data about literally millions of people. We don't know who those people are. We're not interested in who they are, but we're interested in selling advertising to those people. Not us personally, horrible people within our company. Okay, so finishing off our discussion of WhatsApp and encryption, let's go around the room. WhatsApp encryption. What's up, Doc? Or what's up with that? Christina.
What's up, Doc?
Lewis.
What's up, Doc?
David Price.
Are we all doing the same thing for all of these things now? What's up, Doc? Yeah, I agree.
Well, you can have, if you want, you can have a go at what's up with that if you want. What's up with that?
That was really good.
It's more fun
was a racist
to do,
face,
but it's the negative. Okay, moving on from our racist faces, we'll take a short break and then we'll be back in a sec. Christina Mercer. La ya 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 la ya ya la. And Wi-Fi. So, the end is nigh for Wi-Fi. We're about to say hi to Li-Fi. Why?
Well, I don't have to follow that. Yes, Li-Fi, internet through LED light bulbs, is a thing, and it's, well, apparently 100 times faster than Wi-Fi. They've tested it in Dubai. Li-Fi in Dubai-Fi. And
no Wi-Fi, but Li-Fi in Dubai.
Yeah. And the a telecommunications company called Du, or maybe D-U, I don't know. Anyway, and they tested it, and they said they can stream audio, video, and essentially what we recognise as internet through LED light bulbs.
So the benefit of Li-Fi is speed, essentially.
Yeah, it's a lot faster. There are quite a lot of disadvantages to it, but I'm actually very pro Li-Fi. But
So you're not going to tell us what the disadvantages
are? No, I'm going to keep that to myself. No, the disadvantages is basically, obviously, you have to have the light on if you want to use Li-Fi.
Okay. Is it like a full beam light bulb?
Yeah, an LED light bulb. And, yeah. So to use it, you have to have the lights on. So if you wanted to use it during the day, it's not really that good.
So the idea of connectivity also creating light would suggest, at least from layman's terms, that it draws more power. But as I understand it, that's not proven, or it's not in the public domain.
Yeah, I think there's not enough usage of Li-Fi for it to be known, really. But we do know that if you were to have it in your home, for example, you'd have to have an enabled light bulb essentially in every room, unless you just wanted to use like Li-Fi in one room.
So Li-Fi doesn't talk to Wi-Fi then, so you can't have a network and then just boost a bit of it with Li-Fi?
No, I don't think so. I think you'd maybe have to, during the day, maybe you'd use Wi-Fi, and then if you wanted to do something like stream something quite fast or download it, maybe use Li-Fi. But what it could be used for, which is quite good, is maybe streetlights. So if you were, for example, you were needed directions, you were lost, or you don't have any data on your phone, you could go stand under a streetlight.
Streetlight!
Yeah. And then you could use the internet from there.
Sure. Because that in and of itself, in lots of parts of the world, especially parts of the world where they have the same sort of infrastructure as we have here, connectivity is likely to become available to people more through the air than through wires. And so things like this, where you could, light is needed anyway, but you could also bounce a connectivity signal off it. It's quite interesting, I suppose. How close are we to this being an actual thing?
In terms of sort of a general rollout, I'm not sure we're that close, to be honest. I mean, Dubai is the first, DU or Do It from Dubai is the first company to actually test it in.
But they tested it in the public. It actually
worked. Yeah, like a real life situation. But there is a company called Pure Li-Fi that has a couple of products. One a ceiling light and also sort of a desk light.
So you could buy that product and in your home, for instance, have a faster signal to one part of your house.
Well, I mean, one of the things that it could be used for is the Internet of Things, because it is so fast, but it's also really short range, so it's quite secure.
Right.
And that's quite a big thing.
So that speaks to the sort of broader conversation I want to have, really, which is, asking the other guys, connectivity in general, where do you think we are these days? Does it feel okay? Or, you know, what are the limitations? Do you feel like your home broadband is sufficient? But are there things that you would like to do in the future that you can't do right now because of connectivity?
My home broadband is terrible. And I've just installed one of those extenders. And
Keep it to the Wi-Fi, David.
And I thought it had fixed all my woes. And then I went on Amazon Prime Video, and it's worse than before.
See, that's the thing, isn't it? It's streaming media. Yeah. Lewis, you strike me as someone who, you know, you're a gamer.
Yeah.
You must require a robust connection to do the stuff you do.
I mean, when I'm gaming, I require my LAN connection because the Wi-Fi just isn't there. With things like the PlayStation 4, they've only got 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi available, so it's very slow and it's pretty crap. So you need the cable. So I think the main thing that we need to work on is Wi-Fi speed. And, you know, 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi is fast, but the range is a bit crap.
Yeah.
So we need some kind of hybrid system where you've got the reliability of the 2.4 gigahertz channel and, you know, the speed and of the 5 gigahertz channel. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're all working towards. But then you have the other issue of compatibility with products. Uh-huh. Because that's when you start getting a massive headache. Like with Li-Fi, you know, you could buy yourself a Li-Fi bulb, but you couldn't use it with any of your phones, your existing phones, because they don't have the tech built in.
So, yeah, because the idea of a short-range peer-to-peer connection that's really fast sounds great. But as you say, it wouldn't be practically useful. Sorry, Christina.
No, you say that with phones, but Apple in the, iOS 9, in the source code, it says Li-Fi capabilities.
Ooh.
So it...
David's interested.
Yeah. So basically, they're obviously maybe recognising it as a technology that they're going to go towards.
Yeah.
But I don't know, all it said literally was Li-Fi capabilities.
I wonder whether that's a bit of a future-proofing thing as well. I mean, David, you probably know more about this than anybody else, but are there lots of things in the source code, just in case?
it's one of those things people comb through it and they find stuff and then it becomes a rumor. Yes, but by no means does it always.
So a bit like we've said in the past about the way they kind of do the canaries in the mine to do with security. So they'll say something like in the T's and C's, like, we will not give your information to a government agency on the basis that if that disappears, you know that they might be forced to do that. In the same way, you might, if Li-Fi ever disappears from the source code, that's probably significant. Mm-hmm. If it's there, that probably just means Apple is aware of it and thinks if it becomes a big thing in the future, they want to be prepared, but that's it, basically.
Is there any, and I'm coming to this as a total neophyte, is there any sort of health implication for this? This is like a strobing light.
Well,
but just...
No, because the way that the light bulb works, it's like dipped and dimmed so fast that you can't see it with the human eye. So it just looks like a normal light bulb. But it's that dipping and dimming, amazing, which sort of creates binary code.
That'll be interesting. I guarantee you there was somebody who says that makes the bill.
Whether
or not it does. I mean, there's still people who say that the Wi-Fi frequencies make the bill, aren't they?
So. Yeah.
But the Wi-Fi Alliance have come back. I mean, I don't know if it was in direct sort of like, hey, don't get carried away with this Li-Fi. We've got other stuff that's good. So
we've got Di-Fi and Ti-Fi.
Well, they created Wi-Fi Halo, but it's spelled Ha-Lo. Just annoying.
Is a normal Halo spelled hat low?
Two words.
And that's meant to be specifically for the Internet of Things as well. So, because obviously one of the things that Li-Fi has over Wi-Fi is that it is sort of tailored towards a lot more fast sort of data transmitting, what you're connected to more devices because it is so fast and it's short range, so it is securer. So they've come back with that and
interesting.
It's
so
sort of maybe a retort.
Watch this space, I guess.
Yeah.
So given that in-depth and brave discussion on Li-Fi and Wi-Fi, let's go around the room. High five to Wi-Fi or bye bye to Wi-Fi, Christina Mercer.
High five to Wi-Fi. No, I changed my mind. The other one.
A woman's prerogative. So you're saying bye-bye to Wi-Fi?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
What, you've changed in the space of...
No, what?
I think she intended to say bye-bye to Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I did.
And high-five to Li-Fi.
Yeah.
But the question is, high-five to Wi-Fi or bye-bye to Wi-Fi? Lewis Painter.
Very confusing.
Yeah. I'm going high-five to Wi-Fi. I love my Wi-Fi.
Come up with a new one, which is I think that Li-Fi is sci-fi.
Wow.
Ooh.
So you're saying high-five to Wi-Fi?
Essentially.
Yeah.
Sure. Cool. Okay. Watch your space. Li-Fi sounds interesting, but we're saying not just yet. Mm. thank you, everybody, and thank you to listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. But put podcast in the subject line or we won't know what you're talking about and we'll just ignore your email. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. Do find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. And don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to give us a review and tell your friends. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye,
guys.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.